Sea Preparedness and Ocean Policy to order. And we have three presentations today. This should be very interesting. And we are starting.
Although that one was canceled.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right, because Jack Barth is ill, so he won't be here. But we'll schedule him for another hearing at some point in the interim. So we're going to start out with updates on OPEC, Ocean Policy Advisory Council, and the STAC, the Science and Technical Advisory Committee, and Marine Reserves Outreach, with Jay Rasmussen, who's the Associate Director of Oregon Sea Grant. So Jay, please come on up. Welcome. Thank you for making the trip in from the coast.
Just as I entered the, and saw a little bit of fog, I thought, oh my, yes, wintertime, sunny on the coast. And
was it sunny?
It was going to be, I think. It has, certainly has been.
It'll wait till you go back.
There you go. Thank you. For the record, Madam Chair, Jay Rasmussen, I'm the Associate Director of the Oregon Sea Grant Program at Oregon State University. It's my pleasure to be here with you today. The chair had indicated late last week that an update a little bit about the Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee of the Ocean Policy Advisory Council would be some interest to you, and also a little bit about the Marine Reserve outreach and engagement activities that are going on as we speak. So that is why I'm here today. It's a little information. You have two handouts. They're stapled individually. The first is some testimony I put together yesterday. Again, I apologize for the brevity of it. I didn't have much time. I was in D.C. until this weekend, and I did miss out on all the legislative hearings on Marine Reserves. So last night I did listen to one session a little bit to try to catch up. And the second packet is some information on the advisory committee, the Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee, and there are two documents there, and then two documents on the Ocean Marine Reserve Outreach. Let me just mention real briefly that the Oregon Sea Grant Program at Oregon State University is a program in which we fund research. We don't hire, we do not have researchers as faculty, but we try to every 2 years fund competitive proposals that we receive and request. And also it's on outreach and engagement effort with extension. So one of my responsibilities is the program leader for the Marine Extension Program of Oregon State University. And that includes individuals like Pat Corcoran, who I think has been here on emergency preparedness. There's more recently here Sam Chan, whom if you are watching OPB right now and into Earth Day, April 22nd, you will see that he will be highlighted in his work on invasive species and the connection between invasive species of China and Oregon. So, and we also operate the Visitor Center, the Hatfield Marine Science Center, and youth education programs there. So we have about 150,000 visitors and about 14,000 youth through the center every year. Oregon Sea Grant is a statutory member of the Oregon Ocean Policy Advisory Council. With its reconfiguration in 2003, we are now a non-voting member, as most state agencies are. But we also have another requirement. We are statutorily charged to be the chair or lead the Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee for OPEC. That committee has existed for quite a number of years, but it was essentially inactive. And in the reconstituted OPEC that started work in 2005, I believe, when it finally kind of got together, we began the process of trying to activate a Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee. If you don't mind, I'll just use the word STAC to help do that and understand that. So I led that effort with the Ocean Policy Advisory Council, soliciting what kinds of individuals or what kinds of subject matter that we would like to see on this group. That is both science and technical. And another word for technical that we've come to use is experiential knowledge. So we went through a process by which we had a list of, I think, 3 or 4 pages of specialties that we ought to have on a group, and that group probably would have been 50 individuals. And then we decided, well, wait a minute, this is the first time we're doing this. We have no budget. We are going to request people to meet. We'll be able to maybe pay some travel, but maybe not very much. Maybe we ought to keep our expectations a little smaller. So we settled on essentially 5 categories representing physical oceanography, biological oceanography, ecological or environmental, law, and fisheries, and social and economic, if I didn't mention that before, I might have repeated, and some experiential knowledge. And so I was given the task to come back to the committee or the council with some names, and I met, and one of the individuals who's not here today but would have been is Jack Barth, who is on the stack. We had those names brought before the OPAC, and the chair of OPAC approved those formally, and in November of 2006 we had our first meeting, organizational meeting. So this is a very fairly new organization in a sense, at least in terms of activity. You can see in the materials on the first page of the other handout is the form and functions. This was in January of 2006. Keep in mind that everything around ocean policy, particularly about wave energy or marine reserves, is extraordinarily sensitive. And are you all able to find the second page? So this is the form and function to provide the best available scientific, independent scientific and technical advice to OPAC. This is not the IMST, as you might know it. This the independent multidisciplinary science team for the Oregon Salmon and Watershed team. That group has some buyout of their time. They oftentimes have staff. They do reports. This is a group that has none of those advantages. These are individuals who are doing it as part of a service component of their life and are volunteering their time and oftentimes their travel. And we went through and made some kind of recommendations of how we would like to operate. Since that time, a number of SAC members have worked with particularly the Marine Reserve Working Group. By the way, you should keep in mind that when we started this, marine sanctuaries was also on the table. So we were uncertain about what kinds of things would come before OPAC. Marine sanctuaries, marine reserves, wave energy, hydrates, ocean aquaculture. We're not certain. But when we started, it was marine sanctuaries, and then most recently around marine reserves. That committee, and I chair that, has met 5 times, first in November of 2006. And as part of that, we've had one workshop, and that is on mapping. And many of you have been very interested in looking at improving our mapping. One of the things I just mentioned to you, I really appreciate the individuals. Jack Barth in oceanography, Susan Hanna in economics, Selena Happel, fisheries and wildlife, Richard Hildreth. Up until that point, we're all at Oregon State. When we get to Richard Hildreth and it's University of Oregon School of Law, Dave Sampson in fisheries and wildlife at Oregon State, and Craig Young with University of Oregon, the Oregon Institute of Marine Biology in Charleston. We have done a number of things besides meeting sometimes with the Marine Reserve Working Group. Perhaps most significantly, we did review the policy guidance document that is now out for outreach efforts and engagement, and we responded back with ideas about clarity. One of the things that the STAC was trying to do was make certain that objectives were clear, that they were actually objectives that might be able to be reached, you could reach those, and the definitions were fairly clear, and that they were as scientifically and technically accurate as we could have them. We also recommended that since the issue of size and spacing was of marine reserves was increasingly an important ingredient in the discussion, that we would also host a size and spacing workshop, and we will do that sometime in March of this year. This is essentially all on the basis of service of these individuals. In this case, Selena Happel will be leading that. And then we've gone out and looked for money to bring some people in and essentially self-staffed. We've had a little support from the LCD and from the Parks and Recreation, but essentially self-staffed. And for some of us, in some months, particularly like January, I would think maybe 40% of my time is really around OPAC activities. That is not something that's really in my job description, but it's something that we thought was necessary and needed to be done during this time period. So that's the kind of the scientific and technical advisory committee. Every time we have a chance to get together, and every time we put together a paper to OPAC, we remind them that this is a process that is essentially unstaffed, unfunded. Mm-hmm. And if you are expecting the ability of this group to do a lot of work, you're going to have to find some ways to fund that. The other thing that we've had to resist essentially is being pulled into policy issues. We've been very clear in many cases with the guidance document that that's a policy issue, it's not a science issue. And again, we have the Marine Reserve Working Group and OPAC who are looking to do things that are short-staffed themselves, and they would like to have staff, but STAC is not staff, it cannot be staff, and it could not be also because it would compromise what it is about. So in all this, I'm hopeful that as we go forward and we go through Marine Reserves, that whatever we do, that we fund it adequately and that we don't fail because we haven't paid attention to how we manage it, how we administer it, and how we support it. The second item is that...
Do you want to ask
wait.
Now? Okay,
yeah,
sure. We'll wait. Go ahead.
More comment than it is.
Okay. More fun later here.
Yeah.
The other item is the outreach and engagement around Marine Reserves. For some time, and this is an area that... I wouldn't call myself a scientist, but I'm certainly have a fair amount of experience in outreach and engagement. Oregon Sea Grant has entered more formally here since January of this year. And by community outreach and engagement, we're talking about a two-way street where information is presented and information is received. It is not the outreach that sometimes you hear somebody say, well, I'm doing outreach. What I'm trying to do is convince people that I'm right or that this organization is doing something really well. I just came from Washington, D.C., and there's a lot of that. Outreach means in NOAA that people know what NOAA is and that they know that they're doing a good job and that they need more money. That's a certain kind of outreach. That's not what we're talking about here. We believe that the time is right for, I guess I would say, a Marine Reserve 101 for the Oregon coast in particular, where we go out and we spend a bit of time talking to general communities and specific communities of interest about marine reserves, about the ocean, about the science of marine reserves, and then try to receive from them some ideas of what they're thinking about. Not just yes or no, or heck no, or heck yes, or whatever you want to call it, but something more than that. And so beginning in November, OPAC approached Oregon Sea Grant to asked for some help in an outreach and engagement. In January at the Astoria meeting, and the chair will remember, Oregon Sea Grant came with a proposal saying, yes, we would under certain conditions. And some of those conditions were that it had to be bidirectional, that we had to be able to say to the people that were going out and asking them for their thoughts, that those thoughts would be used and incorporated. So one of the commitments was from OPAC that they would not proceed with Marine Reserve planning until that outreach had been completed and had been reported back, and everything, including the policy guidance document, is subject to change based on what we hear a bit. We also indicated that we wanted to form a group and advisors that would provide us some help, and that we're out there not to advocate for Marine Reserves or against Marine Reserves, but we're advocating for an informed public and having them engaged in that. And it's a very short time period, essentially from mid-January through early March. So it's not a lot of time. We also were benefited by the fact that OPAC by that time had completed some documents, and it was a struggle in Astoria to get them to complete and pass along a draft policy guidance document and some questions and answers. But we had some materials. In early days of marine sanctuaries, we oftentimes were asked to go out and talk to people about marine sanctuaries, but we had no information, nothing to go on, and that's pretty difficult to go out and talk to people and say, what do you think about marine sanctuaries? By the way, we have no materials for you to look at. We now have some materials for people to look at. And we also had the advantage of someone who had been a former Sea Grant extension agent who had, among other things, received national awards for her outreach, and that's Ginny Goblish, who came out of retirement. We were able to hire her with some help from the Department of State Lands and from the Commodity Commissions for about a five-month effort. And the effort started the end of January. She and Jeff Felder from our staff did scoping sessions all up and down the coast, trying to get an idea about what locals are thinking about, how they would like to have an outreach program there. And then we've developed a forum here that started last night in Coos Bay, and for the next 10 years maybe too, we'll be going. So the other items that you have in here is a flyer for the... for the forums that we're hosting, and a listening and learning Marine Reserve Community Forum agenda. And as you can see on there, we have Patty Burke from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, who will be making a brief presentation a little bit about the state of the ocean. We recognize, by the way, that not everyone has been so immersed in all this issue of Marine Reserve as people on OPAC or the STAC, or knowledge about the ocean. And the second part is Selena Pell, as a scientist, not a STAC member, has agreed and put together a general presentation on the science of marine reserves. And then the rest of that forum is trying to solicit information. And we actually went ahead and asked some questions so that we could get people to kind of express their thoughts, not just their feelings about yes or no. So we have that. We have this set up so that people can use a variety of methods for getting their information to us. There's some cards so people can write down, and we oftentimes do that. People like to write down something, and sometimes it's pretty direct. But they've set it, and we'll record it, and it will be part of the materials that we'll share with the Marine Reserve Working Group and OPAC. And then we have an opportunity for an open public forum. And then we have some tables around where Selena, Pell, Patty, and others can interact with individuals afterwards. So we're having a kind of a broad-based approach. You can see on the flyer that we have forums, North Bend last night, Garibaldi, Newport, Florence, Port of Umpqua in Reedsport, back down to... Brookings, Port Orford, and Warrenton, and we'll likely have one forum also in the Willamette Valley that we'll try to reach out to others as well. At the bottom of this agenda, you also see the planning team, and this planning team includes quite a number of people from Oregon Sea Grant. We have had to ask a number of our people to do less of some other things to help us with this effort right now. But also from the environmental community, from experiential knowledge. We have Terry Thompson on there, Representative Cowan, and Arnold Husing representing local government. So that is ongoing, and we hope to report back to the Marine Reserve Working Group the end of March. And then, depending on what happens with that effort and OPAC, there may be I would assume, a request for nominations that will begin in April, and we'll have a somewhat limited outreach effort. We'll return to these communities to tell people a little bit more about how they can be involved further with the nomination process. So, sorry, I just ran on here, but...
That's great. Excellent update. I so appreciate all you're doing, and just before I take the questions of people, I wanted to let you know that in our bill from this committee, 3609, Apparently, if anybody has any special kind of CPR knowledge, you know, go down to Ways and Means and on life support right now. Really did surprise us that it came out with such a large fiscal, but the point was being made that it does cost money.
That's right.
We took our piece of fiscal out of it that we were making a gesture to reimburse the stack and in light of the low-down revenue forecast. But one thing that really surprised me was the... how do I say it, other than just outright opposition from the environmental community, which took me by total surprise because I really thought they'd be with us on this. So with that, but I want to thank you, and we do appreciate what you're doing, and we will do what we can to help you get some funding for what you're, you know, the important work that you're doing. So, Rep. Schaffler?
Thank you. Yeah, the good chair uses a lot kinder words about some opposition sometimes in this building. But anyway, Mr. Rasmussen, I appreciate your coming here today. I just met Mr. Rasmussen today. He taught in Iowa for years, and obviously I grew up there, and it's below zero there. I saw the weather this morning, so I'm grateful I'm in Oregon. But also, in the late 80s, early 90s, I worked for Morris Brothers Construction, and we built several buildings down there at the Science Center, and I spent several weeks working on that job site, so I'm familiar with
that. Summertime, right?
Yes, sir. It was beautiful down the coast. But what I wanted to say is more along the lines of what the good chair already touched on. I'm really glad we had this conversation this session because, and I wish it was a broader conversation, because you folks are doing this work essentially for free, and it ain't going to keep going forever.
Well, there is a cost.
Yeah, I understand, sir. I understand, but you know, if we're going to nominate marine reserves, what are we nominating and why and what are we going to do with them? And until we spend the money to do all that, there's no point in having a nomination process. I'm frustrated with this, Madam Chair. I just want to share it. But most of all, I want to thank you for all the work you do and your whole team. So I appreciate
you
coming. Oh, and one question, Madam Chair. You know the OSU ship that goes out?
There are several.
That great big one that I see.
Right.
Do you ever have field trips for legislators on that trip?
No, but we might think about it.
Put me on your list if you ever do.
Right.
That will be the trip that we will utilize our vice chairs on that trip.
There you go.
I don't do the ocean. Sorry.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, I've been thinking you're talking about both Senate and House, right? And that case, so okay,
just that's fine with me. I'd love to go with any senator or anybody.
Senator Bridger, Representative Cowan,
thank you. I do ocean field trips. No problem with that whatsoever. And I actually have known Mr. Rasmussen for quite some time. Longer, obviously, than some of the members, and I appreciated your work for a long time. I was just curious if you have had reports of how things went last night in Coos Bay.
I had a somewhat garbled cell phone message from Ginny last night at 11, and maybe it was garbled because she was tired or the transmission, but then I turned around and called her a little bit later, and it seemed to go quite well. And of course, that's all a value judgment. But people seemed to be interested in the fact that they were able to say something that was recorded, that they were asked kinds of questions and not just given a chance to say yes or no, and that we had different ways in which people could respond, because not everyone likes to stand up in front of a group and say something. There are some who really like to do that. So we were trying to do that. But I haven't heard anything further. I know there were a couple cases in which there were some comments made that she was not particularly happy with, but I can't imagine meetings that don't have some of that happening at some point. So one of the things that the team will be doing today will be looking real briefly at what happened last night. And we do very much believe the fact that you can learn by doing, and that you reserve the right to be wiser tomorrow than you are today. So we will be adapting these a little bit from what we've learned as we go along. So.
Follow-up? I just also wanted to add my thanks. This is a Herculean undertaking to do the number of meetings, and if you just look at the transportation involved between these, it's no wonder there are some areas of garbled cell phone transmission, because we all know it isn't perfect up and down the coast. But Ginny has really taken on a huge load, and I appreciate your bringing her back to do this. we all look forward to the report of the combined conversation. But and I guess just my comment in terms of where the bill is or isn't at this point, it did speak to the point you made that whatever we do with this process needs to be adequately funded. And if the conversation we had around this bill just sort of highlighted that challenge for the process right now, it served its purpose in that respect.
Thank you. Problem.
Question, was it fairly well attended? I mean, I think one
there
of
were 100 and some people last night. And I couldn't
what
tell
I
if she said 100, there were more than 100 fishermen plus, or it was 100 plus generally. But I do know the fishing community, we've tried to reach out to make certain they're aware of it. We've tried to schedule meetings that would be advantageous to local communities, including fishermen, both recreational and commercial. And just one example, Madam Chair, if I could, about the scoping sessions and the ability to kind of understand how people learn and how they meet. When Ginny and Jeff were coming up the coast, they were to meet with a local fishermen's group in Reedsport one morning, and they had left Port Orford, I think, at 1 or Coos Bay, I've forgotten where they were exactly. And they called up there and found out that the weather was going to be awfully good the next morning, so they met that night instead. And so, again, that's a realization here that when you have people, communities, and so on, you need to kind of reach out to them and figure out what works best for them so they can participate. So we've really tried to do that.
Yeah, go ahead. And my other question is about when we looked at the cost for this particular bill, and it kind of got astronomical. Last session I was trying to work on with Coastal Caucus members research for this kind of issue. And I look back at we're doing some interesting things, a lot out of Newport, the cruise study, and I think many of the people here know that, not everybody in the state, and they should, because those things are not cheap. We've got these new gliders that are out doing some telemetry and finding out some ocean kinds of deals right now, and my big issue has always been, if we get these reserves, we've got to do the research. And I appreciate STAC, because we have a built-in group of people who can help start asking some of the questions that we need to know about. And I guess, have you had those discussions amongst the STAC members about, if we get these reserves, what kind of research do we need to do right at the beginning so that we can get some baseline studies to figure out what we're doing?
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, just beginning with those, because the demands on STAC individually and collectively have been so great just around policy and meetings that we have not. But at each of those meetings, we do come back to that, at that issue. And again, it makes a incredible difference about the numbers, about the configuration, about the size, the spacing. The size and spacing one, for example, is one in which we want to look at whether or not the California system of making decisions really is useful in Oregon. So a number of those things, the size, configuration, the protected area around it. If we got to a point here by the end of this year where we had some idea about potential numbers and locations, then I would assume, and I would certainly be calling the committee back into session a little bit for a while to talk about what would be necessary to maximize or optimize the research potential of those sites. And that might be very helpful to you in the next session of the legislature.
Yeah.
Senator Berger?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we are at a point that we really didn't need to be here. This probably should have been done in the very beginning. Going out, I think what we've had lots and lots and lots of discussion and actually some planning, and then had to stop and back up and reverse. And it seems to me that should be a lesson to us, that we really need to not get ourselves in a position of having to stop and then go out to the public in these hearings. We just should do that in the very beginning, and I think it would save a lot of smaller hills to climb.
Well, I'd like to pick up on that just a little bit, too. And
even though that's how it started out, I would like to thank our governor for at least at this point seeing that, you know, maybe this is a good move at this point and shifting gears a little bit and going out now. So hopefully we can get a lot of good information from these hearings. I'm going to be at the one on the 29th. We better be out of here by then.
I'll mark that down.
And I, again, like to thank Jenny and Jeff, and Jenny especially, for coming out of retirement to do this. You don't know how many promises I made her and begged her, shamelessly begged her to do it. So, and I was so happy that she was willing. She comes out of the fishery, the tuna fishery, and Jeff is a salmon fisher, and so these guys are really experts in their field. They know the people up and down the coast, and they know the issues very well, dear to their hearts, and have spent a lifetime in the industry. So, and they understand, you know, they lived at the coast too, and they understand the culture and the communities and the needs there on all sides of these issues. So. And I will say it again. I'm kind of learning my approach from my good representative buddy down at the end there, Representative Schaffler. And I'll say this, is there are no truer environmentalists than people who require the natural resources for their livelihood. And, you know, you can't imagine, we live at the coast, you can't imagine us doing anything to harm the environment we live in or those little creatures that we utilize, you know, for living, for eating. We, you know, who doesn't go to the crab and seafood festivals and enjoy all the good products that Oregon very proudly can showcase around the world? So I just want to say that, you know, and we're all in this together. So any other comments for Jay, questions? Thanks very much.
I'm sure if I could just switch hats for just one closing remark. I want to thank many of you for your support of the Water Conservation Supply Initiative in the last session of the legislature. I'm putting on my Water Resources Commissioner hat here as Vice Chair, and really appreciate that. I know water issues are going to be, are and will be major issues for the future, but I want to thank you very much. You gave the department some tools, and it's not had a lot of tools for a number of years as a general resource agency, so thank you for letting me add that comment.
That's timely. We had Bill Ward here yesterday Brenda Bateman that gave us a complete update on that. So,
thanks very much.
Okay, back to the coast. Next, we have Therese Hampton, the project manager for Oregon Solutions, and she will update us on the wave energy statewide assessment. We've been trying very hard to get Therese here and, you know, accommodate her schedule. She's had a lot of work. She has had to be involved in a lot of the settlement issues regarding the wave energy project. So we're so glad that this worked for our very short session. So thanks for coming today.
Well, thank you. I'm glad it worked out as well. It's a great opportunity to be here and share what I have learned over the last spring and summer interviewing a number of people involved and touched in different ways by wave energy. Again, as you mentioned, I'm a project manager for Oregon Solutions. The primary purpose of my discussion today is some work that I did for Oregon Consensus Program, and I can talk a little bit about the differences in those organizations. But my background in wave energy is that I had the great pleasure of being project manager on the Reedsport Wave Energy Project that was an Oregon Solutions project and that Senator Berger was co-convener of. That was my first entrance into wave energy kind of as a result of that project, and we'll talk about that in a bit. We launched into what we've referred to as statewide assessment. We were asked by the governor's office to interview and assess what are the issues associated with statewide planning and policy issues relative to wave energy. And so that's a little bit of what I'll talk to you about here today. I want to do a little bit of chronology. Most of you may be familiar with this, but a little bit of chronology about how we got here. The Oregon Solutions Project in Reedsport was initiated. At the time, there was a single preliminary permit that had been filed on the coast. Ocean Power Technologies had filed for that site at Reedsport, and it seemed like a good idea to many involved, in particular the community, to designate that as an Oregon Solutions Project, because at the time, people really didn't understand or know clearly what the regulatory process was, and they knew there were issues associated with wave energy, but what were they, and what was the best way to identify identify and understand those. So it was designated as an Oregon Solutions project with the intent to use the community-based model that Oregon Solutions has to really get into the community and understand what those issues were. And I think, I might say, with the great leadership of Senator Verger and Mayor Keith Timchuk, the Oregon Solutions Project really produced the results it had intended. Regulatory roadmap, understanding what role the federal agencies had relative to the state agencies, and a comprehensive list, 10 pages, of issues that people had with wave energy that needed to be addressed. The project did not attempt to solve those issues or answer a lot of the questions, just really to identify them, to say, to be successful as a wave energy project, you need to address these. But in the course of the Oregon Solutions Project, 6 other preliminary permits were filed, and really it seemed like there was a bit of a gold rush mentality happening along the coastline, and it made, I'm sure not only a lot of you get calls from your constituents, but a lot of people on the coast and those even involved in the Reedsport project quite nervous. And the question that everybody was asking was, in particular relative to the Reedsport project, they just couldn't feel like they could answer questions about this specific project if they didn't understand the overall context and scope of what was going to happen on the coast. It would be a different answer if there were one or two wave projects versus wave energy projects all the way from North Coast to South Coast. And the question people kept asking is how many and where. And one of the things that we had worked through in the Reedsport project and that people were discovering as well on their own is that FERC was ultimately has asserted and has jurisdiction over permitting, and they look at things on a project-by-project basis. They do have a requirement for a cumulative effects analysis, but nothing in the federal process will step back and take a look at the coastline and say when enough is enough. So people were asking the question, what role can the state play? What kind of statewide policy and planning should take place? And that was the purpose behind the statewide assessment. I interviewed almost 40 people. I think the list is 39 people affected by wave energy, industry, environmental groups, the commissions, the different commissions, many different locals, to understand their view of wave energy and what the key issues were. And probably the most interesting and rewarding part of that for me was the consistency. It was so amazing among all of these interviews, the diversity of background and interest in wave energy, but the consistency in what they saw as the key issues was really remarkable. And it really came down to 3 things. The first thing was, for some, the regulatory process still felt unclear. But really what it came down to, if you ask a few more questions, it's that people are uncomfortable with the regulatory process being driven by FERC, that it's a federally driven process and that it's so site specific. It just, you know, kind of doesn't fit with what people feel like they need to feel comfortable with wave energy development on the coast. The second is that there just really is such a lack of information of what's going on ecologically within the ocean. To know, people know intuitively there will be impact. You put a wave energy project in the ocean, there will be impact. But what is it? And how do you assess it? How do you evaluate it? And it's a combination of lack of information of the existing environment, but also a really difficult environment to study in. Also, lack of existing information about how existing industry uses the environment. And that's really the third issue that people identified, is this area is already being used. There is existing use in the ocean. And so to put a wave energy project out there will impact that. Again, the question is, to what extent? How extensively will it be impacted? So those were really the 3 primary issues that people noted consistently, that there was kind of a just an uncomfortable regulatory process, lack of information, and there's existing use, and how do you reconcile the existing use. What I also did find with a lot of consistencies, though, is tremendous shared interest among the parties, in particular among the industries. Those in the utility and the wave energy development community do not want to develop at the expense of the crabbing and fishing industry, and the crabbing and fishing folks don't necessarily don't want to stop wave energy development. They just don't want it to come at the expense of their industry. So if there's a way to find a win-win where both industries can coexist, that would be good for all. Also, people understand the need and want to support renewable energy development, but again, in a responsible way and in a way that doesn't come at the expense of others. So with the kind of common shared interest there, then our responsibility or our questions were really, are there collaborative processes? Does it make sense? Is there a collaborative way to address some of these key issues that have been identified? The answer, one of the specific question about the FERC process, we can't really address on a collaborative basis, except for to convey what FERC has shared, is that the state can have more of a role in the FERC process if they develop a comprehensive planning document. That FERC will take into consideration a comprehensive planning document when it makes its decisions. And what that means, comprehensive planning document, they use that, and they kind of use that language, is that if the state develops a plan, or in Oregon's situation, probably an amendment to the territorial sea plan that says where they would like to not see development for certain reasons because they're highly valued for other purposes that are important to the state, and maybe then direct where development would be okay, then FERC would take that into consideration in their decision making. They have been clear that they don't necessarily have to follow a state comprehensive management plan, but they certainly take it into consideration. So that was kind of a key finding in the report, is that a comprehensive management plan could really be helpful. Comprehensive management plan coming from the state could really be helpful to influence this federal process. So then the question is, how do you develop that plan, and what does it include? We think some of our recommendations about collaborative process could be very supportive of an amendment to the territorial sea plan. And so on the second page, the recommendation side of the paper that I was handed, there really are three recommendations for collaboration. One is a collaborative effort around understanding the environmental impacts, not only existing environmental conditions, but what the impacts would be of wave energy. This will happen on a project-by-project basis. If there is no formal collaborative process, this will happen as each of the projects go about getting sited, but you lose the opportunity to do it comprehensively, and you lose the opportunity to do it efficiently. And there are some elements of this, for instance, whale migration and impacts to whale migration, that don't really make sense to do on a project-by-project basis. You really can do it much more effectively and efficiently if you're looking at the whole coastline. And really it builds into the second recommendation, and whale migration is a good one there, that maybe there's even collaboration on some aspects of this, that you go into Washington and California. Whale migration, you know, doesn't stop on the Oregon border, so maybe this one makes sense to really work with the other states to understand the impacts and to find the most effective and efficient ways to evaluate it and fund it, so that people can know, kind of walk in eyes wide open and understand what the potential impacts are. And the third recommendation is a collaboration that really has almost started with Oregon Sea Grant, and actually some of the comments on marine reserves lend themselves well here too, is to collaborate at the local level to define criteria and potential sites for wave energy, to really let the people who know the ocean, who know the community, who understand the impact, say, this is what's important to us. These are the criteria we would apply to whether we would want to see a wave energy project here or not, and given that, here are some potential sites. It is what Oregon Sea Grant has started in Lincoln City and started in Tillamook, and I think there's an opportunity not only to expand that geographically, but to include some other people in the conversation, because in my conversations with the utilities, what they've suggested is, oh, do they have key interests that are important to them? It would be really helpful for us to know that. And we have a couple of key interests, too, location to substations and some of those kind of things that are important. So to really create the true collaborative of all the parties involved, really understanding where there might be possibilities and where there might not be possibilities. So the report, I gave you just the page and a half executive summary. The report's about 20 pages long. It goes into a lot more detail about kind of some of the interests that people have and some of the potential obstacles and roadblocks. But it ultimately ends with these recommendations that we do see an opportunity for a collaborative process. And the recommendations kind of go back to the governor's office and to all of the interviewees. And however they might get picked up and used, we think could be beneficial to the development of wave energy. And I would say, the comments, actually, Senator Verger said it, and Representative Boone said it, and even Jay had mentioned it. There's a lot that can be learned from marine reserves that could be applied to wave energy. It's not too late to do this one well from the outset, to really make sure that everybody understands what's the potential here, what some of the impacts are, and to walk together through the steps of understanding what comes next.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the good chair of the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission just walked in, too. She's a great gal. We all love her. You know, surprising to hear someone ask, do they have key interests in these areas? Well, I tell you, if you're going to build something down there, you better find out who has interest. And every time we have, every time somebody comes talks to us about the ocean, every single day I see the greater growing need to put some money out here and study what we're doing. I thank you for everything that you're doing, but because clearly, if we're going to cite these things, we better know what we're doing. And I'd like to see them overlap. I know they may not perfectly overlap, but why not put the energy where the reserves are if we're not going to be dragging fish and trawlers through there? I don't know if that can be done or not. But one of the things I want to, we talk about the impact of this stuff being built. If we build a wave energy site or LNG, liquid natural gas site, yes, there's going to be an impact. But I think one of the things that's lost in this conversation is if we don't do it, there's going to be an impact, too, that may be far greater on a global scale than if we do it here, where we have labor, environmental regulations, and we really obviously care about our environment here in the state. Because we all use energy. Everyone uses energy. They can either put it here, or they can keep getting it from countries that, quite frankly, if you don't care about the environment, workers, the rights of women, the people in this country. Now, those are our choices. And you know what? If we do something, there's going to be impact. If we don't do something, there's going to be an impact. And I hope that is not lost in this conversation.
Appropriate.
Okay. And my question is that I think that it became clear in the process that FERC is the agency that's going to allocate. However, it is, at least in the territorial sea, that 3 miles, it is DSL that owns the land. And they do need to connect the wave energy parks to something. And they have to get cooperation in that. I think that the state still has the controlling interest on whether any of them get cited. I mean, they can get approval to be cited, but they've still got to work out some stuff with the state. So, I mean, I think we do have the opportunity, as I read it, to have an impact in this, and there is a reason for companies and FERC and everybody to cooperate, because they already gave us the land once, and if they want to go out a lot further, they can go out there, but then they also still have to get it into shore. They have to transmit it across that same land. So there is going to be, I would hope, that kind of conversation.
If I could respond. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may respond to both representatives' comment, certainly the impact of not doing wave energy or some form of renewable is in the conversation. And one of the things that I found most striking in talking to the utilities, their desire and need for renewable energy is just, it's palpable. They're anxious. They feel that there are limited options available to them. Wind is tapping out. It's got all kinds of complexities in terms of interconnection and the way the resource is kind of not consistent, not reliable. So there is a strong interest in finding opportunities here. And I think they're really willing to work with the communities and understand how to make it fit for both. So it's definitely in the conversation. And yes, I think the DSL requirements associated with leasing are very key in terms of communicating state interests. And I think with DSL combined with potentially a comprehensive management plan that guides FERC as well, the state really could have a very robust way of communicating what its interests and desires are relative to development.
Senator Berger.
Yes, well, I think that all of you can see why it was such a delight to have Therese Hampton with us. And when you put in Mayor Timchuk into that thing, you almost look forward to the conversation and to the meetings. But the work that I really appreciated and the groundwork with this memorandum of cooperation that Therese was able to reach came about with a lot of sensitivity on her part, and hopefully on our part as well, to who was at the table, how comfortable were they made to be able to express everything that they needed to talk about. And one of the things that I think made people so nervous was the Marine Reserve wave energy double track coming down. The fishing industry was just shocked out of their boots because they had two things. Once, when we first got started, that wasn't the case. But I do think the groundwork has been laid, and I think that they're very interactive, have to be. We can't do one without looking at the impact of the other. And I don't believe anybody wants both of them all up and down the Oregon coast. And to put an industry that has been here for a long time simply out of business. So,
yeah, and my other one is that I hope people keep watching this whole development, because I look at the proposal that Douglas County has as one that doesn't take up ocean space and does help repair jetty problems that we have up and down the coast. Right. I mean, if you're going to start talking about, you know, the use of our ports, we have to have conversations about the infrastructure around our ports. And there isn't one on the coast that doesn't have a problem with jetties right now. And the Douglas, at least, builds it right on the jetty, which actually kind of supports that. And so if people haven't seen those, I just encourage you to look. And the other thing I think that really was great about the Solutions Project is that a lot of discussion came out, and we saw a lot of information about the kinds of things that are happening around the world and how different one system is from another. And that, you know, if you just say wave energy, you can't just say that. You've got to look at the specifics of it, what it's going to be doing. I comment on the process as being really one that got a lot of information out there where there wasn't much before. So,
Rep. Cohen.
Thank you. And thank you for what you're doing. I really appreciate building on the knowledge base that you've begun to establish in the particular southern part of the coast discussion into a statewide assessment. I think that a couple of comments I'd like to make is that we need to focus on least possible impact, not avoiding any impact, because anything we do, there is going to be an impact. And I think that's a conversation that we need to have about what are our priorities and how can we least adversely impact any given entity. And secondly, the reason I think it's so important to do it statewide is because we have to have a talk about comprehensive ocean uses. It's not just a double track of wave energy and marine reserves. It's where there's a whole industry of cables that come ashore through sandy bottoms that we need to respect. There's a whole variety of challenges out there. And my biggest frustration, as we've had some of the conversations that we've had, has been that they're all sort of siloed. And I've said it before, and I can be a broken record too, like others on this panel, but we have to put these conversations together because they don't exist in a vacuum. And I guess finally to learn from the groundwork that has been laid in many of our communities and some excellent examples, because I represent mostly Lincoln County. I know that many people looked at Lincoln County with like, what crazy scheme have you come up with now, when we tried to apply for a permit that was the entire coastline of the county. But the point there was not to lock everything up, but to look at things more comprehensively. We're not looking at just one spot. We're looking at how this impacts our entire coastline. And also bringing the local ocean users into the conversation early with our what's called the FINE group, fishermen involved in natural energy, who have been meeting for a very long time to discuss some of these issues and interests. And that's where the expertise lies. Those people know what's going on out there in the ocean, and they're the people that folks should be talking to about how to anchor something that might actually stay there or prevent it from sinking or something like that.
Blowing away.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I look at some of the proposals and just wonder
what laboratory this came out of, and do they have any idea of how much impact there is from the ocean forces?
I forgot the cannons we found yesterday on the floor.
I'm sorry?
So you forgot the cannons we found yesterday on the floor.
Yes, there are
the
some
cables.
Cannons laying out there, too. And we also have a buoy down there somewhere that we'd like to get up someday.
There's oil on board.
Yes, which is why we've done some legislation around trying to enforce that. But it talks about, all of that speaks to the complexity of the issue and the need to put it all together. So I applaud any efforts we can do, we can put together to do this in a comprehensive manner.
And I can't say enough about how great Oregon Solutions process has been. I've been involved with two of them now, and they all, I've never heard a bad word about any of them that are out there, and this is yet another one. So this is, it's a great thing to do. It's the consensus building, you know, collaborative action. We talked a little bit about it at Pinware up in Whistler last year, and people are very interested in that kind of process. So have a good reputation out there. So any more comments for Therese then? Thanks very much, and I'm glad you came. We might call you again in the future as things progress.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And I'd like to thank Representative Roblin and Senator Berger for joining us today. That was a long 5 minutes, and we're glad it lasted that long.
I'm a sasser, but it didn't take me out.
Oh, wait. Okay. And I'll let Sue give a quick announcement before we close.
Thank you, Chair Boone. Just to let the committee know, we're scheduled for a tour of the FEMA State Joint Facility tomorrow for our regularly scheduled meeting between 10 and 11:30. And because it's a federal facility, you will need to bring along a government-issued ID, so driver's license or something like that. And the van will be parked just in the loading zone on the south side of the building. And
I'll
see you at 10.
What is south bus?
South is
the back.
The back
the
side.
The State Street side, yeah.
I have no sense of direction.
And so we won't be here is the message tomorrow. So we stand adjourned. Thank you for making
that. Very great. I'm learning so much here on this committee.
This is a great committee.